Well, hello and welcome to the Vote Her podcast, because when you vote, great things can happen. I'm Merritt Davis, media maven, political enthusiast, dog lover, and ready to break down some Georgia politics.
My name is Jen Jordan. I am a former state senator. I'm a lawyer, and I am a lover of all things holiday.
I am State Representative Terry Anulowitz. As of this recording, I live in House District 42. But who knows what will happen when the House maps are released? Maybe later today. I don't know. We'll see.
If we could get permission from the Indigo Girls, we should be playing the song, Get Out the Map. Get out the map.
Oh, that's so good. Yes. That's so good.
There
that's
is really always good. An Indigo Girls song for every situation.
Yes. Well, there really always. Is.
Yes, yes. So, all right, Terry, as we're recording this, it's the day before you're going to go for redistricting, a special session. There have been maps that have been come out to the public that we've seen. Can you explain where we are, what's going on, and how do we see the future with us?
Well, yes, I can. So in tomorrow's very special episode of the Georgia General Assembly, we are going to be talking about maps because, as we've discussed previously on the podcast, Judge Jones ordered the General Assembly to go back to the drawing board, as it were, and redo our congressional maps, state Senate maps, and the state House maps, the reason being that many of those districts were found by the judge to be in violation of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. So we needed to create two new majority Black Senate districts in the state of Georgia. That's state Senate, not the Senate, United States Senate. That's the whole state. And then in the House, we need to create, I believe, five additional majority Black districts. And then congressionally, we need to create one additional majority Black district. All we know as of this recording is that the Senate districts, the proposed Senate districts, are available to the public online. And there is a portal. There is a portal where any member of the public can go to the General Assembly website, legis.ga.gov. And right at the top, you will see a banner that says Public Comment Portal on Redistricting available here. And anyone who wants to can click there and tell the world what they think about these maps.
What do you think of the maps, Jen?
So, and also Fair Districts Georgia, fairdistrictsga.org. You can go there and they actually have the maps or the map, right? Whatever's out right now, they have it on their website. So you can see where the new lines are, where the new districts are. And the only ones we've seen so far are the state Senate ones, and I can speak to that. So to step back for a second, Judge Jones specifically said, in a very detailed opinion, said, not only do you need to create these majority-minority districts, he pointed to very specific ones where there had been a lot of packing. And packing, dear listeners, is, for example, when you put all of a certain race into one district. So it's not dispersed into other districts, which would then allow folks of you know, various backgrounds to be able to run and win. And you pack all of a certain minority group into one district. Of course, they inevitably elect usually someone of that same minority group. And so, you know, you kind of go on your way. And it's called packing because you kind of put them all together as opposed to, you know, doing it the way you normally would in terms of communities. And so he specifically looked at a couple of districts, actually called out a few in the state Senate, and said, look, these are the areas you need to look at. So what did the brilliant Republicans in the state Senate do? They said, how about this? What we'll do is, those districts. And so they take the district numbers. So let's say I'm going to make up some district numbers. Judge Jones says, district, Senate district number 50, there's a problem there because of the way all these folks are packed in, right? So what do? They just change district numbers. and then say, oh, we fixed it, right? And so what they did, for example, they took Georgia SD6, which is the former Senate district that I used to represent, went Buckhead, Cobb County. It was a majority white district, but not by much. I think it was about 51, 52%. The last redistricting, it dropped down to 51%. A person of color won that district, right? Just even though it was a majority white district, purportedly, a person of color, Jason Estevez, won that district. That's the kind of district you're looking for, right? Where there's balance and people can compete and people can elect folks that they believe reflect their, you know, their values, you know, what their political philosophies, whatever it is. So what they do for Jason is they basically change his district number to be one of the district's numbers that the judge said, oh, you have a, I have a problem with this. Just change the number. And then basically took out a bunch of white people in his district and made it a majority black district. Now, you may say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem with that is they haven't expanded the opportunities for candidates of color, right? They've basically taken existing Democratic districts, which as of right now tend to align with minority communities, communities of color, because of how wacky-dacky the Republicans have been, right? It doesn't mean it'll stay that way. And they've basically taken these Democratic districts and then just packed more people of color into those districts to make them majority minority. And the two districts in particular that they did this to were my old district, Senate District 6, and Elena Parent's district, both of which were majority white districts, but not by a whole lot. Right. We're not talking about, you know, some crazy out of sort district. And so they're saying, look, we did exactly what you wanted us to do, Judge. Oh, yeah. And they're the districts you were that you told us to do them to because they changed their numbers. They weren't actually doing anything with the districts that the judge told them to do something with. They just changed the numbers and basically changed the racial balance, which equals at the end of the day, the same number of Democratic seats, which effectively means there has been no expansion of political power within minority communities in the state of Georgia. It is cynical. It is contemptuous. And it is just what Republicans think it is cute, right? They're like, oh, but Judge, we complied with your order. And who can fight with having these majority-minority districts? Because that's what they're going to do. They're going to go to the press and say, what are these Democrats talking about? Look what we've done. We've expanded minority voting power when the reality is they've done just the opposite. And really, And maybe I'm taking it a little bit personally because it's my former district, right, that they've completely stripped. And also I'm taking it a little bit personally because if they did this in the state Senate, if this is the tact they took in the Senate where they've taken these barely white majority districts and just said, okay, we'll do what the judge says and flip these Democratic districts into majority black districts to comply with the order without actually expanding voting power of minority communities, then I look at representatives like Terry Anulowitz, that she may be in trouble, right? I look at representatives like Betsy Holland. She may be in trouble. Any white Democrat within the metro Atlanta area that currently represents a Democratic district is in trouble because if the House does what the Senate did, that is the tactic, to basically just turn any existing Democratic district into one that is a majority-minority district. And that does not comply with the judge's order and specifically the issues he had with respect to packing voters of color into certain districts, because that's exactly what they've done. They've just packed them into the Democratic districts now and have not expanded you know, their power into other districts. Sorry for the rant.
Well, no, I think it's really good and really important. So my question is this it? Is this final? Now you're voting on it? Because it's clear that the Republicans have done the absolute least. They have found ways to find the shortest cuts or it feels like a big dick over. But what I want to know is what happens in the special session? Is there pushback? Is the judge going to be able to look look at this and say, not so much? Where do we go from here?
I've gotten that question several times. You know, what people have asked me, will the judge look at this, say, guys, this ain't it, maybe restart? And I think the answer is like a hard, resounding no. I would be very surprised if the judge would insert himself into what is currently a political process. Until the December 8th deadline, this is a political process.
And That's exactly right.
I would be very, very surprised. And I think it would be kind of astounding if the judge were to say anything before the date. Now, to your question, Mara, is this it? This can be it if the majority wants it to be it. I mean, they have the votes, right? I have not heard from any Republicans. And again, we have not seen the House maps yet, but have not heard about any Republicans who are particularly unhappy with their districts. One thing that is interesting looking at these maps also is, you know, when we talk about redistricting, we often talk about that concept of the communities of interest. So you look at where City of Smyrna is in these maps now. And right now, it's, you know, I used to be, interestingly, Senate District 6 historically was always a Smyrna district. It was mostly a Smyrna district.
It was an all-Cobb district initially.
It was an all-Cobb district represented by Senator Doug Stoner for a long time. Now he's State Representative Doug Stoner. The reason he's State Representative Doug Stoner is because that SD6 was drawn not during a normal redistricting session, but it was changed. I forget the exact year, but it was basically drawn so that a Republican could win that seat. Interestingly, the Republican for whom that Senate seat was drawn did not win that primary. Hunter Hill won that primary and ended up being the state senator who represented SD6 for a few years until he resigned to run for governor, in which case we then got Senator Jen, who was the Democrat to flip that district back to being a Democratic district. Anyway, in these new maps, Smyrna, where I live, is now, Smyrna is kind of separated into two districts, 28 and 35. 35 starts at the northern border of Smyrna and goes all the way down to the northern border of the city of South Fulton, which is in a different county and is a very different, it's a very new city. It is a very different city than sort of the legacy city of, you know, I always use the term legacy city for cities that have been around for a very long time. Smyrna, Marietta, Decatur, Atlanta, East Point, and then you've got sort of the new cities that have been created pretty recently, Sandy Springs, Brookhaven, Mableton, cities like that. So yeah, communities of interest in this map is a little bit of going to be an interesting conversation because you have a bunch of these, we used to describe them like as bacon strip districts. You have got a bunch of really long districts right next to each other in Cobb and in Fulton, which the maps that we currently have kind of got rid of a lot of those bacon strip districts. So it's interesting that
they're
we're
all
reverting
bacon
to that.
Strip. Yeah. I mean, my new
DeKalb is all bacon strip. I live in a bacon strip. Yeah.
My new state Senate district goes all the way from north of Sandy Springs all the way down to Fairburn.
Yeah. And Palmetto.
All the way down.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
That just seems like, so they knew when they were drawing these out, like, all right, so it feels like, as someone who's not on the inside like the two of you are, it seems a little sinister, like shifty.
Gerrymandering sinister. This is the problem and why what they did may work. It goes back to, so what was the problem in the first place? The problem in the first place was diluting the power of minority voters, right? That's the problem. What they're going to argue is that by turning these majority white districts, barely majority, again, into majority black districts, they have increased the voting power of minorities, thereby ensuring that minorities will absolutely be able to elect people that they want to see in these positions. The problem with that is that that's already happened in those districts because it's run along political ideology lines. But if you just stick with kind of this surface level, but we have created these new minority majority districts, Judge, that's what you told us to do. That's what we've done. And you don't dig any further into really what they've done, then arguably they have complied with the order and they can kind of march along. And it may not even be Judge Jones as much as then the 11th Circuit, right? Which is now dominated by Trump appointees. So Judge Jones may say, guys, this doesn't get you there, right? You didn't do what you playing around with the numbers, right? Like six is now in Noonan. They just moved them around. That's all they did. It's like, you can't do that. Well, maybe it goes up to the 11th Circuit then, right? And then the 11th Circuit, they get a panel that really is dominated by Trump appointees. And they say, what are y'all bitching and moaning about, right? Like, they made more minority-majority districts, and there's no problem with this. So the answer to your question is, we have no idea, Mara. And the problem is, we're going into an election year pretty hot and quick. And this is really going to, you want to talk about turning everything on its head. It's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy.
That timeline is something I think that bears mentioning also, because in order to qualify to run for office in Georgia, you need to have lived in your district for 1 year prior to election day. Well, that clock started ticking on November 5th of this year. And so you are going to run, if you intend to run again, if you are an incumbent and you intend to run again, you've got to run in the district that you're now going to have when you qualify to run for office in March of 2024, right? Like, you have to, that's it. There's no, well, let me move into this district that is maybe more majority Democratic. Let me move to this district that might be a little bit friendlier to me. No, you've got to run, like, you've got to bloom where you are planted on the maps that are ultimately approved. And you talk about the timeline. Yeah, so these maps are going to be submitted. December 8th, the deadline. And if the judge doesn't accept them, then again, that timeline gets crunched even further. If the judge decides, okay, I'm going to draw these maps, then there are a lot of uncertainties. It is a very uncertain time, particularly for folks who have announced that they are challenging incumbents either in a primary or in a general election. I have not taken a dive yet into the addresses of folks who I know are running in certain seats to see if they still live in the district that they're planning on running in. But that's going to be interesting also, because if you were planning on running in a certain seat against a particular person, that may no longer be the case when it comes time to qualify in March.
Right. For example, my state senator is now Horacina Tate.
Oh, mine too, right now. But then it's going to be, I think, Senator Donzella James.
No. My new one.
Your new one. Okay. Yeah, my current one is Horacina Tate. My new one will be Donzella James, who's never represented any community in Cobb County. That doesn't mean she can't, right? That doesn't mean she can't, but it's just saying there are a lot of big representation changes in this maps, and people's districts are very different. And that means you've got to, so I had, when we had our city council redistricting, I guess now about 12, 13 years ago, my city council ward changed considerably, mostly because other people didn't want theirs to change. Some of them had to change. I was like, well, I'm good at making new friends. What I mean by making new friends is, if you are Donzella James, for example, and you have never represented any part of Cobb County before, and now your district includes a lot of Cobb County, you've got to be ready to make a lot of new friends in that part of your district. So that's a whole of that. That's a campaign thing, right? That's where you have to go and make sure that you do have relationships. You're building relationships. You're starting to become present and known in a community, because then you might be able, as an incumbent in a primary, could be beaten in that primary by someone who actually does know that community and who actually does have name recognition and is known for the work they've done in their community. So it's going to make for some very interesting primaries and general elections also.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. Number one, could all of this not go through until 2026, right? So it may or may not happen.
No, we're going to have new maps.
Yeah.
For 24.
Okay, so there's definitely going to be new maps.
There's going to be something. I mean,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We will all live in a district with a number.
Okay. And so are you saying that, they went ahead and took aim at the very dense areas, just decided to do it that way, where they could have maybe done other rural areas to empower Black voters or minority voters in other places of the state?
Yeah,
could that have been done, or would that have been more fair? I'm just randomly asking that. Specifically,
what the judge was pointing to is kind of that area in Southwest Fulton, right? That's going into Douglasville, Fayetteville, that whole kind of area, Rockdale down there, right? That has become increasingly diverse. And specifically, they were like McDonough, for example, yep. the chair of the Judiciary yep. Committee. His district was drawn very specifically for him so he could survive. And so his was one of the districts that the judge pointed to. And I think it was like 17, right? Yep. Well, they just gave him another number. Right? They drew his house in and then gave him a very safe white Republican district and just said, well, now you're going to be, I think he's got Elena's number now, like 48 or something.
They did. They actually, I think he's in 42 now because Elena's currently 42.
Yeah. So yes.
Terry, when you're going to be going to the Capitol, this is going to be pretty intense, right? Because I think there are going to be Democrats that are going to be pushing back on this, saying, this is crazy. This is not right.
This will be very intense. And again, the House maps will be very interesting because, you know, the House has a different, totally different leadership structure. Speaker John Burns typically has a very different approach to the world than Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones does. It will be, we won't know until we see them, but it will be tense. I mean, it will be, there may be some Republicans who've had to be drawn in together. That is a thing that can happen. But there might be a lot of Democrats who are very upset with each other internally. I mean, again, I think that's
the biggest thing. Look, I think what this is intended to do is to pit Democrats against Democrats.
Is that by design, you think?
It's by design. I mean, this happened, I think, in the 80s and 90s where there was, this has happened before in terms of redistricting, where it's like, look, we are going to provide these majority-minority districts. And for Black Democrats, a lot of them are like, great. Well, you know, that's great. Not understanding there are such bigger things at play. The Democratic Party is so incredibly diverse, right? And it's like anytime you're undercutting minority communities in any way, right? It's problematic. And, you know, I just hope everybody takes a deep breath and really tries to think hard about kind of the long-term impact in terms of us moving forward and being able to get a lot of our policy prescriptions kind of over the line and not just think about themselves, right? Mm, not just think about, well, I want to be in a 90% Obama, you know, Biden district, right? That way, I don't have to worry about ever having a general election challenge. That really should not be what we're focused on, is ourselves and getting reelected.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and something else that I think it is very important to look to history, and I would be surprised if the Republicans, or at least some of the Republicans involved with drawing these maps, are looking to history, and by which I mean they're looking to the 2001 redistrictings, in which Democrats in Georgia were really trying to do their level best to maintain as much power for as long as they could in a state that was rapidly changing politically.
Wrongly.
Yes.
Wrongly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was there were there are a lot of conversations that could be had about everything that went down in 2001. But if I were a Republican, I would be looking back at the things that went wrong in 2001. Because I always think of that little adage that I think of very often for many reasons during session, and that is, I think it's a South Georgia saying, but pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered.
Hogs get slaughtered.
And you've got to be real careful. And again, if I were a Republican in a map drawing position, I would be really taking a deep dive into the lessons learned from when the Democrats redid these maps in 2001, because the Democrats were not in power for very long after that.
That's so interesting.
Well, and I want to make one last point, which is my Senate district, as Terry said, Senate District 6 was drawn specifically to elect Republicans, right? Specifically to give Senate Republicans the supermajority in the state Senate, which they did get. But things change, right? And so let's say that this goes into effect. It's not ideal, right? It feels very much like actually it's diluting. It's like kind of this, it looks like it's helping minority communities, but at the end of the day, it dilutes minority voting power. But let's say this goes into effect. Well, you know what? We just have to work harder. We have to talk about our values. We have to get out there. And we have to continue to reach out to every single community in this state, because that's how Democrats win, right? It's not about, you know, kind of partitioning ourselves off and saying this community is homogenous and this community is homogenous. That's not the way it is. Georgia is incredibly diverse. Could this present some challenges in the near future? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I think that, like Terry said, I think the writing is on the wall and it's just a matter of time.
Oh, yeah. And again, if you are in a district that has been dramatically redrawn, you just have to ask yourself, how good am I at making new friends? And how determined are you to make new friends? Because it's not impossible to win in a district that has changed dramatically. It's not impossible to win in, I mean, my goodness, in the Georgia House right now, there is a white Republican who represents the majority Black, majority Democratic district. He has excellent constituent services. Like, this is not, you know, that's what it comes down to, right? Nobody in that chamber can run against me, well, right now, or I guess we all live in different districts right now, but nobody in that chamber, you have to remember that it's real hard for them to run against you. It's real hard for them to vote for you or against you. You have, you know, what are your constituent services? Because when it comes down to election day, that's the stuff that ultimately really, really matters.
It does. And I think that unfortunately we are in a political process where everything seems to be about clicks and about show business. And at the end of the day, politics is not any of that. It is serving your community and serving your constituents and doing
the
work.
And talking to folks, right?
Yes, and making new friends. I mean,
not just saying, I want this cul-de-sac. I want this subdivision.
Right.
I want this neighborhood, because I think that they look like me or they'll vote for me or whatever it is. It's like, look, when you're an elected, and Terry knows this, you represent everybody.
Everybody.
Yep. Everybody.
Everybody.
Even Republicans.
But, you know, that's it's a bummer to see that some of the optics are that I see from Republicans. I want to just say it feels like it can be hard making new friends, exactly what you're saying, working across the aisle, and what some of your former colleagues would do in private, but they won't do in public. And that's kind of a bummer. But making new friends is always a great thing to do. And we're going to have to keep our eye on this. Terry will give us, Terry's got a front row seat. So we're going to hear everything that goes down in the Capitol. I can't wait.
Technically a back row. I sit in the very back row. I love my seat in the back row.
Fly on the wall in the seat.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So speaking of making new friends, the day we're recording is Rosalynn Carter's funeral. And I found it to be so interesting that the first ladies in attendance included, so you have Jill Biden, Michelle Obama, Laura Bush, and Melania Trump. And this, to me, was so interesting because she's been somewhat of a ghost. We really haven't seen anything from her at all. Like, literally, she's been nowhere. And I wonder, who makes the call? How did she be a part of it? Why does she want to be a part of it? And what conversation's going to go down between these ladies? And what is this showing us? What are we taking away from this? Anybody want to weigh in?
So this is interesting. I don't know exactly who makes the call and who plans this. I would assume it is the Carter family, but I know there is a tremendous amount of protocol when you are talking about anything involving the White House and the presidency, and protocol is a beautiful, wonderful thing. And so it is, I think, perfectly within the bounds of that protocol and appropriateness for every former president and first lady to be invited to this. And, you know, of course, it is their up to them whether or not they accept the invitation. It's fascinating that Melania Trump is coming, because she typically is not a joiner. Like, she doesn't...
Not a joiner.
She's not a joiner. So I think it's very interesting. And I, you know, we can armchair therapist this, right? Like, maybe it's because she felt, you know, she just felt like it's important for the first ladies to stick together. I have absolutely no idea. She is a mystery wrapped in an enigma, but you know, I think it's right. I think it's good that she came, to be honest,
agree.
Because it is it's that protocol, and it is respect. And there is a very small group of people alive on this earth who have experienced what it is like to be a first lady.
Well, and she's going to be with her favorite, right? Didn't she plagiarize Michelle Obama's speech? She can say, hey, thank you very much. That's right. Jen, do you have any thoughts on Melania coming to town? And I only I'm singling her out, not because this isn't like an anti-Trump thing. I mean, you all know who we are. I'm just saying she doesn't do anything, and she's scheduled to be there. Jen, thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think it is protocol, but and I know that specifically for the Carters, that this stuff has been planned out for years, probably even prior to the Trump administration. But look, I think that the Carters have always done everything they could to be kind to the presidents and the first ladies. I think that they understand, of course, uniquely, it's a very small club, just how stressful it is, how hard it is. And no matter, you know, what your political kind of philosophy, you know, and where you are, you know, these are people too. And I think this is really big for Melania to do this because, of course, you know, she'll get plenty of questions and where has she been and has she been evading service and the like. And that was a joke. But, you know, I do at the end of the day think that this is a sign of respect. And I think it's warranted for the former first lady.
Yeah, it's interesting too. The former President Trump on his Truth Social, when she died, he put out a statement that was, for him, somewhat human. Let's just say that. It wasn't nasty. It was human. And it was clearly like Jen, you said, this had been known in advance and planned out in advance. I just think it's all fascinating because she is not campaigning with Donald Trump right now. She is not doing anything in that realm and showing up for this schedule today. So we're going to have to see what that looks like and if it means anything. I just think it's fascinating. On the lines of fascinating, before we get to what we're raving about this week, the Koch brothers have just announced they are going to put their money and bandwidth behind presidential candidate Nikki Haley to defeat Donald Trump. There's a lot of money with them. What do we think? Is it going to have an impact? Does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, they're the institutional donors. You know, they have so much money behind them. And usually how they go, there is a whole kind of bevy of donors that go with them. So it's interesting that they've decided to put their chips on Haley. And I think that's significant for Haley. I mean, it's kind of like what you were saying earlier, Mara, before we came on. I mean, this is the Vote Her podcast, right? And so we've got a woman who's running for president who is getting the backing now against a former president of some of the most significant moneyed interests in the world. And so I think that bodes well for her one way or the other. And with that kind of backing, there's going to be a lot of change that comes with that.
And just a sidebar, because I want to hear, Terry, what you have to say. I've been reading that the Republican Party, their donations are not great right now. That they're
because they're all going to pay for the legal fees.
Right. So this, I think it's significant. Terry, what do you think?
No, I think that's right. I think the money is very, very important in any kind of campaign. And if Nikki Haley is going to have Koch money, that's a big deal. It's so interesting to think about how money translates to votes, though. And I think when you're talking about Donald Trump, I don't think any historical or traditional kind of assumptions that you make about money and getting out the vote really applies, right? I mean, he's got this legion of supporters who, many of whom will not care if he is even convicted of a felony. And yeah, I think that those donations are down. I think all the donations he's soliciting right now are going to his legal defense, which is going to be considerable because he's got a lot of legal defenses in a lot of different states, and in the federal government. But no, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be. I've heard people now talking again about her as a possibility for vice president. I just can't see that happening. either.
Not with Trump. I mean,
no.
And he's calling her, like, what does he call her? Bird brain? Or, I mean, that's just, these things are just so terrible and sexist and, but.
Well, it's interesting because usually his, let me say this, usually his nicknames hit. Right? Like, you're like, ooh.
Like Meatball Ron. That's an inspired one.
It's pretty good. Just,
like, you're like, they're kind of funny and they kind of support what you think of somebody, right?
Right.
That's what makes them so good. Bird brain with her, I'm like, that basically, that's just...
It's just sexist.
It's just sexist.
I mean, really,
it's sloppy. Yeah. It's Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
It's weak.
Yeah, that's weak sauce.
It's weak sauce. All right, post-Thanksgiving, ladies, what are we raving about? Jen.
Oh, me first?
Yeah, all right, Terry, if you want to go first, whatever.
Let Terry go. Terry's always positive.
Well, because we had the holidays and because we had Thanksgiving and because we're going into special session, I have all of my holiday decorations up and you can't see this, but behind me is my dining room tree. And the dining room tree is the tree on which I put all of my White House Historic Association collectible ornaments. And
this is when I wish we had like the you know, the sound thing that's like the clap in the background.
Yes. Yay. So on my tree, it's a very tall pencil tree. And the garland is ribbon that is gold and white and purple because those were the colors of the women's suffrage movement. And so those are the garland colors. And then I have my mother-in-law has always get every year we get that year's ornament. And I've also purchased for myself the back catalog of the ornaments. This year's ornament, which I do not have yet because it's not Christmas yet. But this year is honoring the Ford administration. Last year was a gingerbread house. It was gingerbread recipe from Pat Nixon. So tying this to what's happening, you know, to the loss of Rosalind Carter, I know that next year will probably be the Carter's commemorative ornament, which I think will be lovely. But no, there are lots of different wonderful White House ornaments. And also the Georgia Capitol Museum has an ornament every year that they put out. And you can purchase those at the Capitol. If you go to the Georgia Capitol Museum, they have, you know, there are the Georgia Archives. It's the Friends of the Georgia Archives. It's, I think, FOGA.org. But if you Google Friends of the Georgia Archives, you can purchase your Georgia Capitol commemorative ornament every single year. And you too can have a nerd tree in your dining room.
Oh my God, I love it. I can't tell you the joy that I get of Terry just in the weeds of all of this. Like I'm smiling so hard it hurts because it's just the opposite of anything that I'd ever do. And it's just awesome, Terry. Tip of the hat. It's great.
Tip of the hat.
Yes. Jen, what are you raving about this week?
So what I will say is, first, I'm going to visit my relatives in Michigan, and I am not going to be down at the Capitol for redistricting. Again, if we had the in the background.
Yay!
So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about the holidays and being with family. I think after the year that my family has had, losing a bunch of people, I think I've really tried to take a step back and just try to be a lot more present with them and not be online and not, you know, be thinking about stuff that really ultimately I don't have any control over or power or ability to do anything about, and just appreciate what we have. So that is what I am raving about. My beautiful children and my handsome husband and my dirty dogs and, you know, and looking forward to the entire month of December.
Well, I am raving about two books. One is the Jonathan Karl book. I'm in the weeds of politics. See, you guys have done the work. As I always say, I'm an enthusiast. So I listened to Jonathan Karl's book, Tired of Winning. I think he's just a remarkable journalist, reporter. He's got so much inside information. He's a great narrator. And if you like palace intrigue, this is a great listen, again, I'm an audiobook enthusiast, and I am also raving about, because I know it's going to be great, is the new Tim Alberta book, which is called The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory. And it is the intersection of politics and evangelicals. And his family is, he's the great journalist who's written for The Atlantic. And he did that whole Chris Licht expose with CNN. He wrote an entire piece on Nikki Haley a couple of years ago, which I would recommend people read in Politico. That was made a big splash. He's a phenomenal writer. But I can't wait for that book, because if anything evangelical corruption content is just like, that is my favorite thing. I'm just raving about that. So, it's already pre-ordered, and I will listen to it with excitement, because I like learning and I like making new friends. And that's a part of why I like that stuff. So there you go. Okay, that's good stuff. Good shit, ladies. All right, we're going to have to take next week off, but then we are going to come back with our special holiday episode, which is going to be great.
Well, and we'll have maps by then, at least maps that have been voted on. Right. And so we really will be able to do the post-mortem. And hopefully Terry Anulowitz will be able to remain a state representative. Fingers crossed.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
I
hope so. I really enjoy it. I never had any district numbers put on any of my signs or other printed materials. So
which was very
helpful.
Smart, by the way.
Yes.
Always looking ahead, Terry. Always looking ahead.
Always. She's so good. All right. We will talk to you in 1 week. 1 week off, and then we'll be back. Thanks for listening.